Okay. Well, congratulations to everyone here then, because you've been deemed important. My name is Shane O'Donnell. I'm with OpenNMS, an open source project building some network management software, as we'll talk about here in a little bit. Effectively, the 50,000-foot view of the presentation is, if you want to hack, cool, but understand what technologies you're working with. And if you don't understand the technologies you're working with, you don't necessarily have to hack to learn those technologies. But there's those of us that use them every day that and provide means by which of teaching people these same technologies, but for different ends. An overview of what we're going to be talking about. Effectively, what is network management? Just defining what is really going on, especially in the larger enterprises, ISPs, places with a lot of devices attached to their networks. What are the concepts behind it? What approaches are they taking in building network management solutions, systems management solutions? And what are the technologies that are being leveraged? The big one, of course, SNMP, the Simple Network Management Protocol. There's also RMON, the Remote Monitoring Protocol, ICMP, which really is not a network management-specific protocol by any means. It's the Internet Control Messaging Protocol and is used just for basic routing, let alone network management. And then some more conceptual-type ideas, the idea of discovery and the idea of polling, or discovery being the going out and finding what is really attached to your network, and polling being once you know what at one point was attached to your network, how do you know it's still there, still performing the same functions that it was? So network management from a standards perspective, the OSI came up with their huge document, their manifesto on what the five key areas of network management are. They've listed them here. However, realistically, fault management is what people usually think of, the ability to tell if a router has gone down and then what action do you take based on that. But they also include configuration management, which is configuration overall of the entire network, not just configuration of specific devices. Accounting management, which is everything from the dollars, what kind of return on investment am I getting from my network, as well as how many bytes are on my network. I mean, really doing some counting and some monitoring from a metrics perspective. There's performance management, how much of my network's being used, when is it being used, how are systems performing that are attached to the network, and security management, which they graciously thought that security was a nice little subset of network management. And if you talk to the security folks, network management is a nice little subset of security. So it is duly mentioned. We won't go specifically into the ISO's definition of how it fits here because it's really broadened well beyond what they ever dreamed it would be. However, that's just a standards-based approach to what network management is. What is it really? If you are responsible for providing someone a service, whether that means you're hosting a server for them, whether that means that you're providing network connectivity for them, or internal within a company, you're responsible for the routers, switches, hubs, et cetera, that's in that network. There are a whole lot of people that have a whole lot of differing needs. However, when you get right down to it, they all need some similar technologies under the covers. So you have people that are responsible externally, internally, and people then that are responsible for the network itself, whether you're responsible for the Internet backbone or whether you're responsible for the Ethernet hub in a four-person office. There are also big companies out there. I came from a large insurance company not too long ago, and one of the big reasons for doing network discovery was asset management, finding out what you really have. If you bought 10,000 PCs and paid somebody to install 10,000 PCs and you go out and you discover your network and find 2,000 PCs, somebody needs to account for roughly 8,000 PCs. And their means of managing people is not necessarily as good as their means of discovering what happened after the fact. So asset management is also a big driver in network management as well. And then there are people whose sole jobs are effectively to sit in big companies and ask people to generate reports and then provide those reports to their bosses. So that's certainly a degree of that in network management as well. But realistically, from my perspective anyway, the cool part of network management is getting in working with the technologies that are involved under the covers. Extending and enhancing the tools is probably the biggest part of network management today, because everybody sells an off-the-shelf solution that does exactly what you want it to do until you actually install it, and it doesn't do anything near what you want it to do, and now you have to make it do what you want it to do. So there's a great deal of scripting involved. There's coding at protocol levels. There's coding at application levels. You name it. But there's a whole lot of that that goes on. And most of that goes into automation. Automation being defined as what are you doing to eliminate somebody having to sit there, receive a message, and take some sort of action on it. So if I get a message that says I have a router down, but I know that every time I get a message that the router is down, really something else has gone on, how do I automate the process of either ignoring that event up front, or when I receive that event, checking something else to make sure it's really the case, and then repairing the situation without having someone be involved? There's notification. If that router is really down, who do I page or who do I email or what red light do I turn on, whatever the case might be. And integration. There are no real good standards out there for how the platforms were supposed to be built. So you're stuck with a whole bunch of homegrown solutions that you now have to come up with some sort of middle ground for extracting the data from several separate databases and providing them into one data source. Highly leverages Perl, Python, and Shell scripting. If you do any of those, you're a prime candidate already for network management. If you understand the underlying technologies, you should probably go out and get yourself a high-paying job right now. There's also Expect, which is a cool little scripting environment slash application language, which is effectively allows you to interact with things that provide you some sort of a cursor response back. For example, if you wanted to automate an FTP process, you could actually provide within Expect a script that says, if you see this prompt come back, issue this command. If you see this response to that command, issue this command, or issue this command if you don't see something else come back. It's certainly worth exploring if you haven't before, and that's why O'Reilly named the book Exploring Expect. So take a look at that if you aren't familiar with it. And also there's alternative interfaces that are often built to these applications. If there are three tools in your network to manage different devices and you want to provide someone a consolidated view of what the network looks like at any given time, a lot of times they'll want to have a web page or something that gives them the core information they need. So there's a lot of CGI that's put into this stuff. Java applets are used quite a bit by the different tools. A lot of it comes down to basic screen scraping and representing the data as you see fit, but that's a lot of the job as well. And why do people use network management? If you look, this is roughly the standards categories that we talked about before, but probably the important issues here are fault monitoring is reasonably self-describing. You monitor for any faults in the network. If a device goes down, you want to know about it. But there's also an issue that not all devices provide the same type of information. And if you've written all of your scripts or code, what have you, for Cisco routers, and somebody up the chain makes a decision that says tomorrow we're going to be a Bay shop, there are certain issues that are going to have to go along with that from a network management perspective. Also, if you're in an environment, in the insurance company I worked with, we had 17,000 remote routers. If somebody decides that there's going to be a configuration change in the network, that means that you've got to touch all of those routers. You aren't going to do it by hand. You want to be able to write scripts to go out and change those configurations, and this is where the automation piece comes in. Performance management, you want to know who's using how much of the bandwidth, because if you have restricted bandwidth between two sites that you can't upgrade, and you find out that 80% of that traffic is web traffic going to Playboy.com, more power to the guy at going to the website, but everybody else is getting piss-poor performance on their email or whatever. So you need to be able to monitor who's doing what and be able to throttle them back, provide some sort of quality of service to these people. And it's also a way to monitor your network for when you need an upgrade on a specific link on a server, whatever that case might be. And security management. You want to know when devices get plugged into the network that aren't supposed to be there. You also want to take a look at the traffic that's going on that network every once in a while. And if, for example, passwords are passing in clear text from some application that you that you recently installed, if you can read that protocol dump and recognize those clear text passwords, so can anybody else with the access to somehow get that traffic off the network. Okay, SNMP is a very basic protocol. It's defined in the standard as an agent manager model. You can kind of look at that as client server, and it's, you think, very thin client. It's implemented in kilobytes of code on managed devices, not megabytes. It's a very thin application, and effectively what it is a layer for you to make requests based on the SNMP standard from a remote manager and get the same sort of data back from whatever device might be under the covers. There's five basic transactions within SNMP. Some of the later versions added additional transactions, but the basic transactions are the ability to retrieve data from the device, where you issue a GET command from the device and it responds with some sort of data using the GET response transaction. There's also a GET next transaction, which allows you to traverse. If you don't know what data is available, you can say, starting at your at this point, and it could be the root of this, the root of its data, give me the next data value, and it will incrementally give you every data value that it knows about within that, that subsection of its database. If you want to change that remote data, whatever that data might be, there's a set functionality which allows the manager to effectively push some data value out to that device. And any set that is that you send to a device is responded to with the GET response packages that just says effectively this is the new value you've set for the, that data spot. And then there's an agent-initiated data transaction, which effectively says that gives a router the ability to say, I'm overloaded or I've got a interface that went down, something along that line, and he can send a trap back. And if, and all that is an unsolicited request from a managed device. What layer is SNMP? SNMP's layer 4 and higher, its application layer in the IP suite. Yeah, it runs over UDP, but SNMP itself exists at effectively layer 5, 6, 7 in the model. SNMP also defines how the agent is supposed to represent the data that is available on it. The standard actually defines the management information base, which is the MIB provided by a device, and it uses a numeric encoding scheme, which is effectively a tree. So if you start at any, if you start at 1 in the tree, which is the root, that actually maps to the part of the tree that was mapped by the ISO, which is the entire part of the tree. With underneath the one branch of the tree, there's one through however many. It just so happens that the third branch under number one is a branch they decided to parse out to organizations that wanted to monitor, that wanted to define their own subtrees. The first or the sixth organization that they provided a numeric identifier for was the Department of Defense. The Department of Defense, of course, when SNMP was built, owned all of the Internet protocol and the responsibility for how it was actually being deployed. So the root of all SNMP for IP managed devices will start 1.3.6.1. That takes you down into everything that's going to be managed via the Internet protocol. The hardware vendors, when it came time to for them to put their data into this tree structure, the first thing they all said was, you know, I've got better data than everybody else, so I need my own particular branch of the tree. Well, the standards body reacted to that by saying, okay, we will create private branches of the tree, and under that private branch of the tree, there will be a spot reserved for specific enterprises. And Cisco, you can have your own identifier, and HP, you can have your own identifier, so on and so forth, right on down the line. So they created the private enterprises branch of the tree, which is that 136.141. Well, that was functioning for a while until they realized that everybody had this great data, but now you had to know specifically where every vendor was putting this information in order to get it, when in fact there was like 90% overlap between each vendor's implementation. Everybody had to provide information on the interfaces. Everybody had to provide a system name and system contact information and things like that. So the MIB2 standard evolved, which effectively defines a subset of the tree that has unilateral type information that would be ubiquitous to whatever type of network devices you had out there. So system information, interface information, protocol information, all of that's defined under MIB2, which happens to be 136121. We'll come back to these numbers in a second. That's the only reason I mention them. Here's the examples. Is that readable out there at all? Okay, well, the presentation will be available from the website. You can go download it and take a look at what I'm trying to show you here. Effectively, this is an example of an SNMP get command. The get command, this SNMP get is actually provided with the UCD SNMP implementation that's available on almost every major Linux distribution, and you can download it just about any site. This is version 4.1, to be specific. But the SNMP get command is a function that ships with the UCD implementation, and it, all it does is effectively issue that get transaction that we talked about. You pass with it the version number that you want to use under the covers, and we're, in this case we're using SNMP version 1. And SNMP has a concept of a community string, which is typically implemented much like passwords. Well, that's good, except for the fact that there's no encryption of the password. So if you pass this community string over the network, now anybody with access to TCP dump or any sort of protocol analyzer is able to pull it, and now they've got the quote-unquote password for your network devices. So there's a community string, and in this case, and in many cases, it's often set by default to public. We then specify the host that we want to go after, and we specify a specific piece of information we want to get. In this case, the command asks for system.sysdescription.0, which is an actual endpoint in the MIB tree that says this is the information I'm going to have. This is part of the MIB2 tree, and it says specifically I want the description of this system. And what he responds back with is effectively a one-line response that says system.sysdescription0 equals this string. And the string includes the host name, the OS that's running on it, the version of the OS, et cetera, a whole line like this. Now, the next slide actually shows the exact same command being run, only it uses the fully qualified object identifier, or that numeric string that we talked about. So the only two things that change between these two commands is that system.sysdescription.0 is actually replaced with .1.3.6.1.2.1.1.1.0. You can see why they implemented the text naming of the fields, so you didn't have to remember all of the numeric strings. But you get exactly the same data value back. In the following command, all I did was reissue that exact same command, and I piped it into a cut. So I got exactly the data field out of that command. And if you could see it plainly, you would see that it looks pretty familiar. It's actually the output of uname. So all that SNMP is doing is passing a get request to the SNMP agent on the device, and the SNMP agent has mapped that specific data value to whatever the output of, in this case, a uname minus MRNSV. It gives you everything but the platform or protocol descriptor. I don't remember specifically what the field they left out, but it's making the system call that's equivalent to the uname command. Yes. Oh, why? The question is, why is there a leading dot in the object identifiers, the numeric strings? And that's that if there is a leading dot, it's interpreted as the root of that MIB tree. So we are starting from the topmost point in the tree, and we are walking all the way down to the specific data point that we are looking for. Now, if you want to know specifically, as I mentioned, the getNext command or the getNext transaction that's implemented in SNMP allows you to effectively walk the entire tree. And what we've done here is just issued SNMP walk from the system part of the tree, which is one step above where we asked for the data from before. And what it's done is filled the screen. You can't tell, it's piped into more, but there's several screens of output if you do something like this, and you can see what information is available to you if you don't have a good description of what data that agent's going to provide. To change data, we use the SNMP set command. Again, this is provided with the UCD implementation. We issue a SNMP set. It looks a lot like the SNMP get command, only what we have to do beyond this, actually I'm getting the fields here first, so I'm getting syslocation, which is a location identifier for that system. And we pull that, and the value is, I can't read it from here, I think it's on the road again is the value. We then issue the set command, which takes predominantly the same parameters, except it also asks for an identifier of what sort of data type we're going to be passing, in this case string, represented by a letter S, and then we pass the string that we're going to set it to, in this case, DEFCON 8, Viva Las Vegas. The response, again, to the SNMP set command is the get response packet, which just says, effectively, this set transaction has happened successfully. So we get that response back, and SNMP set displays that output for us. We then issue another SNMP get, and we can see that the value has, in fact, changed. Now, ARMON is the next standard that we listed on the overview. I'm not going to go in depth into ARMON, just simply because ARMON is an extension of SNMP that's not nearly as widely adopted, but it's out there, it's available, and it provides some very unique information. We'll gloss over it here pretty quickly, but there's a question in the back. I heard the word encryption. That was about on encrypting the community string. Right now, there's several versions of SNMP that are out in play. The main one that's been standardized on right now is SNMP V1 because it was the easiest one. Most vendors have moved to SNMP version 2C, which was kind of a compromise in their moving to version 2. They had hoped to incorporate encryption on the entire data part of the packet. However, they couldn't come to agreement on how that was going to happen, so they defaulted back to the community string implementation. That's version 2C. Version 3, which is out and released, actually includes allowances for several types of encryption that you can plug in, and the entire PDU, the SNMP PDU, is encrypted, including the community string. However, we're stuck in that ugly chicken and egg syndrome where the management vendors won't sell a management platform that supports SNMP V3 because none of the agents have been installed on the hardware to run V3, and the hardware vendors say they aren't going to install it until there's management software to take advantage of it. So we're screwed in the long run. Again, ARMON is an extension of SNMP. It uses SNMP for the transport, and it uses the community strings, everything just like SNMP does. What it defines is some additional functionality on the agent and some more well-defined MIB values that it can collect from. And it introduces the concept of groups, which are just kind of areas of functionality that are provided within the ARMON standard. In ARMON V1, there's 9 different groups of functionality. In ARMON V2, it's an extension of those 9 groups and adds additional functionality as well. ARMON typically comes with the concept of a probe or some sort of device that's going to sit on the network, listen to the traffic that goes by, and populate its tables based on whatever it happens to see from that piece of information. You don't have to necessarily have dedicated probes. For example, Cisco gear often includes a lot of ARMON functionality, but it only includes groups 1 through 4 and of the functionality there. Today, ARMON is very much focused on the LAN. ARMON 2 has extended that a little bit, but the vendor support for ARMON V2 has been limited at best. These are the 9 ARMON capabilities. Effectively, the difference between ARMON and SNMP is SNMP, the agent itself, is turned itself internally to look at what sort of things are going on the device itself, whereas the ARMON agent is actually monitoring traffic that is passing. So it'll give you statistics based on what kind of traffic it sees. It will provide you, for example, alarms if it sees a particular packet pass or if certain thresholds are exceeded. It will keep track of what hosts it has seen packets from. It will tell you who the top talkers are on that particular segment of the network. Some very good information, especially if you're trying to do performance tuning in the network. I'm not going to go through all of these, but I will point out that near the bottom there's a packet capture capability, which will actually suck data in off of the wire and store it in a MIB accessible format, so you can then later go and query that device for packet captures based on timing or trigger packets or whatever that case might be. Here's the V2 additions in ARMON. I'm not going to go through each of these. There's several very good books out there on ARMON V2 that'll do a much better job than I would in 3 seconds of trying to explain it. Again, the slides will all be available on the OpenNMS website. I'll give you the URL later, but I'm sure they'll also be available via the DEFCON website as well. Now, other related protocols. I mentioned ICMP earlier. The Internet Control Messaging Protocol is not a network management-specific protocol, but it's heavily leveraged in network management. It's effectively ping. There are two operations within the scope of ICMP that allows you to issue a ping, which is an echo request and an echo reply coming back from any device that's supporting ICMP, which by standards is anything with an IP stack. So you should theoretically be able to ping anything with an IP address and get a response back, provided there's nothing blocking packets in the interim. But because we've created a scenario where network management is dependent on the ping getting through to a device to determine for the management system whether that device is up, we've created a need now to allow ICMP through firewalls, which is fine, except for now, well, not now. This has been going on for a couple years now, but things like Loki, the tribal flood stuff, that's all effectively using ICMP echo reply packets with a payload of some sort of tainted information. Typically, it's just some random pattern or a regular pattern generated to pad that data area. What they've done is they said, look, if these people are going to be stupid enough to let me use ping through the firewall, I'm going to put data in there and I'm going to actually make some sort of distributed attack to them. So why do we consider a network management protocol? It is a reasonable method of telling you if an IP stack is up and functional. That's the good news. The bad news is usually you don't give a shit if the IP stack is up and functional. You care about whether there's applications running above that IP stack that are functional. So ping a device all day long, if the web server on it is, if the HTTP daemon is not running, it doesn't matter because you only care whether your web server's up and going. And why do we ever mention ICMP as a security tool? It's specifically because of the vulnerability we've created by leveraging it as a network management tool. We made the firewall guys drill the hole in the firewall to allow ICMP through, so that's what allows the distributed stuff to happen. Okay, so who are the players in the market? I put this slide up there because typically a lot of us work in environments where we've heard of HP OpenView or Tivoli or other applications like that, but we don't know necessarily where they fall. These are the big players in network management today. HP OpenView, IBM Tivoli, Cabletron had Spectrum. They spun that off as an own division all to itself. And there's also point products out there that don't necessarily manage everything in your network, but manage specifically Cisco routers, for example, or Bay routers in the case of Nortel's Optivity. But there's also open source alternatives out there. These are probably the biggest ones that you'll run into. Again, you can go out to Google or SourceForge and search for these things and find out about most of them. One of the cool ones to take a look at is the KeyOps Next Generation. It effectively provides a GUI. It acts like a GUI front end to Nmap. If you want to do a port scan on specific devices, it automatically, as it discovers the device, it does a port scan on it, and it will provide you back a complete list of whatever's running on it, mapped back to a standard Etsy services type file. RRD tool and MRTG are a couple cool ones if you're doing performance monitoring. They'll allow you to go out and pull a couple data values off of a device, usually via SNMP, and then it'll graph those values for you. RRD tool is the underlying data store for that. It's short for round robin database, and it's a cool algorithm for a non-growing database that is worth taking a look at. And MON is probably the de facto standard for the open source. How do I page somebody, or how do I email somebody? How do I send an alphanumeric page if a device goes down? MON is an interface that allows you to pass these things as parameters, and then it's got back-end hooks to serial ports and the TAP protocol and things like that to allow notification. My standard disclaimer, I work for OpenNMS, so you might consider this the marketing part of the spiel, but since we don't actually sell anything, I'm hard-pressed to really describe it too much as marketing. We're building effectively an open-source alternative to the big players, the OpenViews and Tivolis and things like that, with a couple of different twists. One, the thing that differentiates this from the list you just saw, the GXSNMP and Cricket and things like that, is scalability. Most of those products break down somewhere around trying to manage about 100 nodes. Our goal for first release is the ability to manage networks of 2,000 nodes with scalability and distribution architected in upfront. So effectively, you could have a dedicated device sitting in each of your remote networks, monitoring those networks with just a much lower overhead database synchronization piece that goes on. First release functionality, we provide ranging and filtering. So you can say, I only want to know about this subnet. I only want to know about this device within this subnet. I only want to know about devices in this subnet that are running a service on port 80 or 8080 or whatever that case might be. Network discovery, we'll go out and find what's attached to the network as well as what services are running on those devices. And we do service monitoring versus stack monitoring. We'll come to that in a little bit as we talk about synthetic transactions. But again, the distribution capabilities built in up front, an event subsystem with some hooks to event correlation will be capable, and everything from a configuration perspective and data store perspective is being handled in XML for flat files and Postgres relational database under the covers. So if you want to do ODBC or you want to just write your own SQL reports or Crystal Reporter or whatever you want to do, it's SQL under the covers. And XML, so parse it in the language of your choice. It's all a flat file. This comes back to our service monitoring versus stack monitoring. We've created this concept of the synthetic transaction, which we've given it a name, really, more than anything. People have been doing this forever. But ICMP doesn't tell you if your web server's down. It tells you if the IP stack on that box is down. And there's the case of the blue screen of death. I mean, unfortunately, we have to work in environments with Microsoft tools in them. And there are cases where a Microsoft box can get the blue screen of death, but it'll still respond to a ping, which doesn't do your management application a whole lot of good if it's still getting all the information it needs to consider the device up. So ICMP is not the sole solution in determining the status and availability of a managed device. So we're talking about the synthetic transaction, and what we've really defined that as is, for example, if you telnet to port 80 and you get the prompt back and you want to issue native HTTP protocol back to that port, or port 25 for email and things along those lines, that's what we're talking about doing, automating those things under the covers. So instead of saying the ping came back so the web server's up, we're actually going and we're downloading either a banner or some sort of web page from the HTTP daemon to tell you that the web server's actually up and running like you think it should be. We have three layers of this synthetic transactions. One is what we do to figure out that there's a service running on the port, which is just a simple port scan type approach. The second thing we do is a predefined status determination capability, which says effectively, if I can contact this port and he responds to the protocol that we think he should be running on that port, we're going to assume that that everything's well and good. Then we're also going to have a extensibility capability there as well, where you can define what kind of things you want to send to that port, what kind of things you want to expect back for it, and you can continue to script that transaction out. So if you're running an e-commerce site or whatever the latest e-buzzword is, you send it a packet, and you can track it through an entire dummy transaction and then check the database to see that the record was written and then determine that your e-commerce site's up. So basic example of the synthetic transaction, for the initial discovery, we'll try to open a socket on port 25, which in this case is going to be where our mailer daemon is going to be running. And if we get a response back that includes the 220 banner, which is part of the SMTP protocol, we're going to assume that, in fact, there's an email daemon running on that port. However, as we get down further into it and start to check it for status, we might do something a little more in-depth where we actually open the socket to port 25. We get a response back that's that 220 banner. Based on that information, then, we will issue the hello command, again, part of the SMTP protocol. Based on receiving a 250 message back, which is standard part of the protocol, then we will go ahead and send a quit and gracefully close that socket connection. So, yeah, there's a little more overhead in what we're doing, but that gives you valuable information back to that shit's running like it's supposed to. Out of the box, we're supporting five basic things for synthetic transactions, FTP, HTTP, SMTP, which gets us through the sockets piece of it. Under UDP, we'll also be checking DNS just with basic API calls to hostname lookups. And then also layer 3-based monitoring. We're providing capabilities for ICMP in case there are devices you just want to ping, whatever that might be, an NT box or something. Under the covers, we're using Java 2 wherever possible for a couple key reasons. One, it gives us platform portability. Yada, yada, yada. They talk about Java for portability, whatever. But realistically, we're seeing about a one-third time to market for what we were seeing in some of our early C++ development. And the fact that Java provides a lot of shortcuts to sockets programming and a lot of tools that are available as well that allow us to cut some time off the delivery. And it provides native threads. And in a case where, yeah, I know everybody's thinking that Java performance sucks, but if you are in a case where you're doing a lot of outstanding transactions and most of your processor time is actually in a wait state based on waiting for some response to come back from that managed device, the more you can make that parallel, and in this case via threads, the better off you are. So we're using the native threads capability in Java and trying to improve our performance based on that. Java Swing for the GUIs, XML and XSL wherever possible. It's key to the middleware as well. We're going to be using either Jabber or SOAP for middleware. JDBC, great hooks for database access in Java as well. And the RDBMS stuff, we said day one that we were going to develop for Postgres because it's the open source alternative for databases. However, to make this thing scalable, we had to also provide some means of a scalable backend as well. So we're developing for Postgres and we're testing in Oracle. But then a month ago, MySQL decides that they're going to open source their platform as well. So we haven't decided exactly how we're going to handle them yet, but we want to support them as much as possible. This is a screenshot from the application. I'm not going to take you through a demo. I'd be more than happy to provide one for you later on. But effectively, those are all the buzzwords that we wanted you to see. This understanding that this is not readable, I put this in here just because I know that some of you will want to download the presentation and take a look at it for the pieces that I glossed over. This is one of the pieces you should take a look at. It describes from a functionality perspective how the distribution will occur, how events will be passed between the distributed polar and the master station, how discovery happens on one box and shares database information with the other. And understanding it's unreadable here, take a look at it when you get a chance to get a little closer to the presentation. And some of you are inevitably asking, why the hell am I at DEF CON if I came to talk about network management? Well, up front, we said there's a lot of overlapping technologies between the two. And effectively, how many people have written their own port scan tools just because they could? Well, again, this is another option for port scan capability, but effectively we're using it for a different end other than just finding out what vulnerabilities might be there. We're also working closely with a lot of members of the, well, not a lot of members, some members of the SANS teams in some special projects they've got going over there where effectively they'll check and see, for example, if there's been some sort of intrusion detection, that a flag that's been raised, and in some of their distributed honeypots, they can have a central console somewhere where effectively they'll have all of that information come back and be made aware centrally if there is some sort of IDS flag that's been thrown. The other reason we're here, and the reason specifically we're in the newbie section of the talk, is, I mean, a lot of people out there want something to code. They want to figure out how to do something. And I mean, this is a great option for somebody that wants to write a port scanner and see if it's going to work. I mean, write it up, send it back to the project. We've got guys that have written this stuff for years that are more than happy to work with people and bring them up to speed on how these things work. So we consider what we're doing beneficial from both ends, in the fact that we give you a goal for something to code. We also give you some feedback on what you've written. And we get educated in the process as well, because we want to know how people want to use the platform and what their bitches are with their current platforms and things like that. So we want to encourage involvement from every part of the spectrum. And the Java stuff is kind of cool because it does make the sockets stuff a lot easier. You don't have to know everything that goes into sockets in order to set up a connection and go out and do it. So something to consider anyway. And in conclusion, this stuff's pretty cool. We enjoy what we're doing, and there's a lot of technology overlap between the security field specifically and network management. Also, the more managed a network is, the more holes that have been drilled in firewalls to allow different traffic to pass, the more potential exploits there are on the other side of that firewall. So there are some definite relations between network management and security. And my mantra, if you want to really, if you want to be a script kiddie for the rest of your life, there's all kinds of scripts you can download and run. If you want to be a somebody that can contribute something back, you need to learn something about what's going on out there. A great way to do that is to partner up with somebody that's writing the kind of code that you're looking to write. You can see the examples that we've done. We can review code that you've done and effectively make it a mutual learning process. And that's the spiel. Thank you. Are there any questions?
Do you have anything for usage?
Right now we're agentless. However, I see that not too long in the distant future, we're just going to be recommending probably like UCDS and MP libraries so that you can put them, or the agent distribution itself, which will monitor things like that. A cool part of UCD that I didn't mention before is that it's extensible not only from a C API perspective, it's also extensible from a scripting perspective. So you can say, anytime I query this MIB variable, I want to run this script, and you give me the output of that script back. So if you wanted to run top, or you wanted to run PS minus AUX or EF or whatever, you can get the output of those things back, which gives you a lot of the kind of information you'd be talking about. In the back?
Oh, I just want to get your website.
Oh, yeah. You're a great straight man. www.opennms.org. Full word open, think open network management software, so opennms.org. Yes, sir. I think I can. Okay. Oh, you just wanted to look at the slide. So it truly was a question of can I go back? It wasn't not will I. Any other questions? Yes, sir. It depends. Right now, probably the question is, if we release an agent for the system, will it be written in Java as well? Probably not, just because the Java virtual machine introduces another layer of failure, which could leave you without something managing the device. So we would probably, what we want to do is leverage tools that are out there already. So UCD will be the answer to that first. Then down the road, if that's not doing everything we want, it'll probably be a C, C++ implementation. Yes? The question was, if we write our own thing, C, C++, will we provide some kind of wrapper to allow for secure transactions? Today, out of the box, UCD's SNMP libraries and the agent supports SNMP v3, so you could plug in the standard SNMP v3 encryption capabilities and you're secure, theoretically. If there's no other questions, thanks for hanging out. See you next year.